Well, it is 1 o'clock, and this February 16th session of the Diablo Canyon Independent Safety Committee will be in session. I'm Dave Rossin. I'm acting chair of the committee, and we'll have an afternoon session today that will run until sometime around 5 o'clock this afternoon. Copies of the agenda are
back there, Rob?
They are. At the back chairs, agendas and brochures.
Okay, and we will be taping, so members of the audience who wish to comment should come to the podium so that their words can be heard. We've got a couple of introductory items. First, Phil Clark, who chaired this committee recently and a couple times in the past.
Attorney Rob Wellington,
and Furman Wardell, and Mr. Clark. So, unless any member of the committee has a comment at this stage, we'll move ahead with any members of the public who wish to comment. And the rules are stated in the agenda. The main point is that in general, we ask if somebody has an item that they wish to talk about that's not on the agenda, that they use this period to comment on it. And if you wish to discuss an item that is on the agenda, the best time to take that up is when the presentation on that subject is made. And the text in the outline of our agenda will apply. We have in our notebook the minutes of the October 5th and 6th public meeting. And the minutes are open for discussion.
You want to see if there's any public comments?
I'm sorry. Is there any member of the public who wishes to make a comment at this point? You represent the public.
I'm ready to go on with the agenda.
Thank you. Any comments, corrections, etc., on the minutes of the October 4th public meeting?
I have some corrections and comments that I have marked both into this electronic version plus on the airplane, the latter part in the paper version that I could offer.
Are they such that they change the sense of the minutes rather than clarifications or
no, I would say that they're clarifications. I did have one comment on the using the term inspection tour for Diablo Canyon versus simple public tour. And I think we may have discussed previously what we want to call the tours that we sponsor for bringing public in. That would have been
we use the term public tour.
Public tour. And so our minutes showed us an inspection tour.
Okay.
Perhaps if we could change it to be a public tour.
Okay. And the others, you'll make sure Rob gets them.
And then I'll provide the others to Rob. And there is one place where we needed a descriptive paragraph, and I've drafted something for that purpose. So I'll provide those to Rob.
The descriptive paragraph doesn't change the sense?
No.
Okay. Any other comments or corrections to the minutes?
That's an editorial, but I'll give them to Rob.
Okay. Then do I have a motion to accept the minutes as amended?
Move it.
Second?
I'll second that.
Thank you. Favor?
Well, aye.
Okay, Rob, the minutes are up to you to finalize at this point.
Thank you.
I had a question on the minutes, Dave.
Yes.
Not a clarification or a change, page 20.
Is there any difference between the pink and the one we got in the rainbow package?
I think they're still minutes. They just we apparently
slightly different
ended up using a different color for some reason
okay.
unknown to me.
Go ahead, Furman.
Looking at the last paragraph, it starts with Mr. Belmont discussed.
Yes.
We all there? Discussed the current status of the nuclear quality and licensing and QV key and noteworthy quality item issues list, which replaced the integrated assessment report. We used to get the integrated assessment report, which has been replaced by this new list. Do we get the new list? Do we get that regularly? Mm-hmm. We do get that?
That's my question.
Okay.
A monthly basis.
All right. That was my question. I just wanted to be sure we got it.
Okay. Okay. All right. The minutes stand approved. Rob, can you discuss our agreement with Phil?
Next item is the. Follows the standard practice of the committee in connection with an outgoing member who still has services to provide and has done work. As you might recall, Gail DePlanc was doing some work on the annual report at our last meeting, and Phil, his term having ended, he still had scheduled a fact-finding, which was conducted this week, along with Sheila at the plant, and also to continue to provide and finalize his services to the committee in connection with reviewing and commenting upon the PG&E's responses to the 14th annual report and assisting the committee in this meeting. So this contract provides for his consulting services through those services.
And
in the decision, obviously, it was part of the stipulation of all the parties.
Stipulation said the parties
would support
a request,
right,
for funding.
Yeah.
We've said that if they want us to do more, we think we need more.
Right.
But I'll check on that. Correctness of,
okay,
saying the decision provided for it. I don't think it did.
Okay.
Now that applies to a change in scope of what we do, specifics of what we do.
Right. Well, that was a stipulation of the parties prior to the initial part of the rate case. As it was framed, was that the parties agreed that as the rate case went ahead, if there was an additional scope of services of the committee, that all the parties would support an increase in rates to provide for that. Phil's question is whether it's actually included in the decision as such, and I'll take a look at that later today and report back to you.
Does this mean that if we came up with a particular activity that required some additional costs, that we in effect would have to make a proposal and submit it to whom?
Correct. Well, part of it is one of the discussions was whether we would apply in the attrition process the PG&E. So we'll have to. We actually have to would apply to PG&E as well as the PUC. Mr. Ruger has a comment. Maybe.
Yeah, I'd like to add a few things to that. First of all, the stipulation did talk about having the parties support additional funding if, in fact, the CPUC wanted additional services.
Right.
That stipulation referred to the items that were discussed by the parties, not a general open-ended, anytime you feel you need to add other functions that you come back for additional funding. One clear thing that did occur is the commission did ask us to be able to continue with the videotaping here, mm-hmm, which would be under your budget. So that, I think, is an appropriate one, that we should provide you with an increase to cover those costs as you go forward. That's the only item, as I understand, they actually directly asked us to do, though they encouraged some other things, which perhaps you'd have to come back if there's added costs on that.
And that was part of it, and you're correct, but the parameters was that the parties would support if they were looking at additional public outreach.
Right.
And that was the only specific item that was identified by the PUC.
The other thing you'll find is the general rate base ended very differently than it has in the past, in that we actually had a settlement agreement for the entire general rate case this last time. And it was basically a black box settlement agreement that agreed on a certain amount of funding that didn't specify what it was. So I don't think you'll find anything in that decision that actually ties to additional funding here at this stage. There are opportunities for attrition, filings to be made, and things of that sort in that approach. But I don't think you'll find anything in the rate case that gave specifically additional dollars here other than what's in the formula and our recognition that the videotaping obviously is something that the commission did want us to move forward with.
Okay. Specifically, Greg, we were charged to do more in the area of public outreach. If we were to come up with a particular activity, but one that's not within our current funding, would it be appropriate for us to submit a proposal to you and say, this is what we have in mind, here's what it would cost, would you consider that in that form, if we had specifics?
Yes, but part of that obviously would have to be talking about your entire amount allocated to you now and how that is utilized. Mm-hmm. And it would really be the commission to be able to, through one of these attrition proceedings, to agree for additional funding.
Yep.
But we would be the person you could come to with your request.
You're the one that would have to do the agreeing, is that right?
We would have to submit it to the commission for approval, essentially, as part of general rate-based attrition filings.
David, I think the commission is the one who set our budget, authorized us, and they would have to approve it.
Yeah.
Whether that somehow goes through PG&E, I don't know.
Well, we don't have a proposal in our hands.
Right.
And it sounds to me like a process that would not be an overnight process would follow if we did. But at least we know, if we wanted to start down that road, we know what we'd have to do.
And I think, and as Mr. Ruger has indicated, the one that's apparent now is the issue of the committee picking up the cost of the videotaping, but seeking to get additional compensation to cover that through the process.
Well, Rob, will you put that in the form of a letter that we can then transmit?
Yeah, as I understand, that takes place later in the year, October or November. So we'll...
For the attrition filing?
Right.
Well, two things. We're going to be filing a little after mid-year.
It's a relatively small fraction of the total budget, so things such as we'll be discussing the current level of compensation for consultants to the committee. Those things actually could be larger drivers to the overall budget that the committee needs to perform its functions than the videotaping. But we could view it, the videotaping needs to be viewed in the context of the total committee budget.
But you do need a document from us on the videotaping, right?
If you would like some additional funding, yes, we need to have an idea of what that costs.
Right. Please take care of it.
And that part should have been taken care of already, so that's something that you would not need to request additional funding from the commission. That would be part of our settlement to allocate that to you.
Okay.
Yes, if you need something, let us know what the cost is.
Okay.
Anything else? Okay. Next, we want to discuss the response of PG&E to the committee's recommendations of the previous year. And we have a lengthy document in hand that we've all had a chance to look at. And I think before asking Greg to perhaps explain anything he wants to on this. First, I have to ask, Greg, do you have any specific comments on this?
My only specific comments relate to the recommendations around granting security clearances to the members and consultants of the group, and I think that maybe we'll get to that in the longer in the discussion. Beyond
okay.
that, I don't have specific comments.
Okay.
Might be worthwhile to do we want to just go through sort of page by page and see if there's recommendation by recommendation,
right.
And just see if there's comments on AM?
If we have to. Well, let me ask first, consultants, any specifics in this document that you wish to discuss?
Dave, I would think for the record, I would emphasize what Bob just said. We probably ought to go through one by one and say whether we really accept it or reject it, have comments for the record. We've
okay.
always done that.
I think that would be good to do.
All right, let's do that. So we'll start with R04-1. DCPP should remain aware of the possible unintended consequences of the operations leadership initiative on the rest of DCPP and its impact on DCPP and its culture. Any comments from the committee on the PG&E letter on this? Greg, you want to say anything more on this?
No, I think it's pretty self-explanatory. Yeah, if you have questions on any, if you want me to expand, I will. But.
Any questions?
If not, let's go to item two. This had to do with employee perception that management expectations on safety are not consistent with performance reviews, reward, discipline, specifically including the relationship between the newer method of employee performance evaluation and these perceptions.
Comments on the response?
Dave, we looked at that yesterday in the fact finding.
Okay.
And I think the response is acceptable, but that there's a follow-up item. They refer to a 2004 PG&E Premier survey, which looked fairly directly at this, questions on employee recognition and safety. We got a high-level summary of that at the fact finding yesterday, which we didn't really get a chance to digest. So I could close the item as having an acceptable response, but that the committee ought to look at following up on the Premier survey and understand what it said and what's going to be done with it. I said we got a high-level summary of it yesterday, but I think it needs more attention.
Are you going to discuss this during the report on your fact finding?
Not much more than I just did, because we know it's there. Mm-hmm. We started to look at it and concluded that it needs attention from the committee.
Okay.
I had a question, if I could ask a question. Mm-hmm. Changing subject slightly. On the bottom of page 3, we talk about where it starts, however, at the bottom. An attempt was made to ascertain the reason that the survey was less positive, and it lists some bullets down there. On the next page, the top bullet, the use of the culpability model was listed as an item that might have pulled the positive results down. We had looked at the culpability model some time ago in the past, and it looked like a pretty darn good model to us as far as getting to the bottom of what the problem was, what the human error was, and it looked like, if I recall, it was a no-blame process you went through with the employee making the mistake.
A negative reaction to it by people on the staff?
Not specifically with the culpability model, but it's a little bit different culture to be able to identify and to hold people accountable for activities as opposed to the team's accountable. There's no individual accountability.
And I take it this is something that is going to continue, and you hope that it'll produce some positive results.
Yes, and it is producing positive results.
Anything further?
No, thank you.
Okay. Let's move to number 3, safety culture. There's a long paragraph here and a long response. Anybody on the committee have comments to make on this?
Do you want to read the statement, please?
Yes,
sir?
I'll be glad to. Safety culture needs to be a commonly shared and understood term at DCPP. DCPP should develop or adopt a definition of safety culture. Each employee at DCPP should become familiar with the concept of safety culture. Safety culture should be incorporated in training and all other activities at DCPP. A belief that safety culture is built in through design, testing, procedures, and quality assurance, quality control is not enough. There must be a conscious effort to incorporate the concepts of safety culture into all activities, including training, coaching, supervision, management, and leadership. And the PG&E response begins with the words, "We agree," and goes on from there. Sheila, do you have specifics?
I felt that this response was far too brief. My concern was that there was not a really, even in the response, I didn't feel there was a good understanding of what safety culture was. As demonstrated in the last, under safety culture and organizations, values, and behaviors, which is the IMPO definition, but then the sentence was added, the safety culture supports an effective safety-conscious work environment. It's the other way around. A safety-conscious work environment supports safety culture. I didn't think that the developmental opportunities around safety culture were sufficient. They talked briefly about protected area access, resocialization every year, and they talked about safety-conscious work environment, and they talked about ECP and safety culture. I really believe it needs to be a more pervasive phenomenon than that. I also was concerned, if you look on page 9-5, where they talk about, again, they're still talking safety culture, promote nuclear safety as the highest priority at the plant. Certainly, a continuous focus of attention, but in and of itself, that's not safety culture. And promote conservative decision-making as a core value, certainly a part of safety culture, but in and of itself, it's not safety culture. So my sense is this, and it's a difficult concept. It's quite elusive in many ways. But I think there needs to be a more pervasive integration of the construct of safety culture into everything we do.
I don't disagree conceptually with that. And in fact, my belief is that virtually everything we do is tied into safety culture at the plant and how we operate, how we make all the decisions we do, et cetera, on that. I guess I would need you to be more specific if you see some holes in what we're doing that we need to emphasize.
And I agree
because
with you.
Because the problem statement was extremely general.
Yeah, I understand. But at the very end, it talked about integrating it to your leadership training. It talked about integrating it into the management observation program. And maybe it's just kind of my mindset, but I make a distinction between a focus on safety and safety culture. They are not the same. They are both critical. And I believe that you focus on safety in everything you do. But safety culture is a pervasive mindset. Mm-hmm. That people share, and I think it has some very distinct characteristics, and we can talk offline about that. And I think that many organizations are just coming to get their arms around what safety culture is and how it works in an organization. So I don't see a focus on safety and safety culture as synonymous, although they are certainly related and reinforce one another. So I'm looking for more. I guess that's my bottom line here.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
We need to understand more then in terms of what you're looking for.
Yeah. Dave, if I could comment. We did look at this yesterday, both Sheila and I, and I thought that it is responsive to the immediate elements of our recommendation. And I note that it ends up saying we will continue to look for opportunities and act upon them. So I think that's welcome openness and that you will be hearing more, I presume, from the committee. I had one specific comment. The definitions that you have picked up come from INPO.
Mm-hmm. I've been introduced to the committee yet. It's Vice President Nuclear Services for PG&E. She just joined us recently. She mentioned she has a comment she'd like to make on this one, too. So.
Yes. And, Sheila, we worked on the committee together at INPO for the principles document.
Yeah.
And I understand your comments. And, in fact, one of the things I've been working with Dave Oatley on is to bring those principles and those attributes to be more meaningful and to be more visible. We just met with our officers and directors this week to go through those attributes. We did some breakout sessions, and what we're looking at is how we incorporate that going forward. So I just want to let you know that I understand where your comments are, and I think there is a little bit more that we can do. And I think the industry itself struggles with being handed a document and then understanding some of the things behind it. You know, when we worked on that committee, there was a lot more basis behind it. We looked at a draft workbook, and I think I have a little work to do with the Institute to make sure we roll some of those things out so that the industry picks those up with the intent that the committee reviewed it with. So we're using some of the tools we had in that draft workbook, and we're implementing in the station, and I think I can work here at Diablo to make sure that we incorporate that into what we're talking about with this recommendation.
And, you know, INPO is working on a training course. But the series of vignettes behind each of the principles, so
great.
That might be valuable.
Definitely.
And I think our people are very bright and very capable, and I think we can create some of our own to work into that process.
Right.
That
this
we can
our own.
That's not imposed.
That's
ours.
Right. That's right.
But it's an elusive concept, and it's a struggle, and as you well know from the group.
Right. Yeah. And it's interesting you picked up on the safety-conscious work environment, because that's one piece, as I talk to folks, that I built into the presentation that I made to make sure that we use, there's even a diagram that we had talked about where safety-conscious work environment is a subset of safety culture, which is then a subset of organizational culture. And so that's a key point bringing into the organization is how we define each piece and how they interrelate. And so I appreciate what you said, and we'll work on that.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, and it's a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you.
As a committee, we look forward to meeting you individually.
Just a quick question. Greg, maybe you could answer this, hopefully. The bottom of page 9.5 talks about enhancing a common approach to change. You talk about a full-time internal consultant, and in these words, to bolster the current work of external consultants. Could you explain that just a little bit? What is the absolute role of this person?
Okay. Well, we have, over the last number of years, used external consultants to assist us in some of the change efforts we have. In particular, Mercer Delta Corporation and several of their consultants have been working with us. We decided that we need to have an individual with the type of skills that they were bringing full-time on the staff to assist us with some of the change efforts we're going through. And so we did bring in an individual. We actually had someone earlier, but she decided to pursue other things and wasn't staying here full-time, never really was an employee. She was a consultant, but working full-time here. And we just did hire, now about a half a year ago, Pierre Dubé, who is trained in change management, trained in assisting and facilitating organizations in making change. So he's full-time on our staff. He's advising us. He's helping various groups in some of the change efforts that they need to go through and how they improve what they're doing in their operations.
Okay. He's a PGE employee, or is he
a
consultant?
He's a PGE employee.
But you refer to him as a consultant. I guess that's what confused
me. An internal consultant.
Yeah.
But he is, in this case, Pierre was hired on permanently as a PGE employee.
Okay. Thank you.
We look forward to meeting him either on a fact-finding meeting or at a future public meeting. I think this discussion illustrates how difficult it is to arrive at a simple construct of what safety culture is. And I think you know it when you've got it. And it's very hard to be specific, but you also know it when it isn't there. And I think there are strides being made, and I'm very pleased to hear this discussion about what you have in the future.
Any further comments?
We've really gotten into item number 4 already. Any comments on that particularly? It really ties closely into the discussion we just had. Anybody?
Let me say that in the fact finding yesterday, there has been a lot of follow-up. We did talk about the human performance program and the corrective action program, and there have been a lot of follow-through and follow-up. I'll talk a bit about that today.
Okay, very good.
What Sheila said is correct, but the thing that we found did not yet exist and was intended to be the focus of this suggested to him that they make a conscious effort, one way or another, to assess how you could do this, provide integration of the various programs, and whether it would be useful to them. As an example, the corrective action program is something that is owned by the line organizations, and that's what they say here about human behavior. But there is a corrective action group. It develops the policies, the procedures, the requirements. It monitors how many people are using them. Provides some coordination and oversight and integration of the programs. It's not an exact analogy, but my belief, and supported by Dr. Scheinberg, who knows a lot more about organizations than I do, and the fact that INPO is putting increasing attention on this human behavior, they're looking at it as a cross-cutting issue. Dabo Canyon is in the process of trying to clear an NRC issue of human performance. It just, to me, calls out for a look at whether you really couldn't do better in bringing all these together and increasing the effectiveness. And we recognize that you have been making improvements in the individual programs, and I think some very significant improvements. But it's that coordination, integration, whatever's the right word. So my suggestion to the committee is that you hold this open for a further response, considering what we said yesterday at the fact-finding and what I've tried to summarize here today.
Well, I think without in any way rejecting the overall fact that we've gotten responses on our recommendations, we definitely should keep this in the spotlight for the year to come. And I think there's a general interest that we want to do more and hear more.
Let me just mention one thing. Phil, I believe you were referring to the recommendation 044, where you're talking about kind of coordinating all the activities, culture change, safety culture, et cetera. And yet, in your comments, you're talking about human performance. In the specific human performance area, we have a central group that's been helping us with human performance and moving that. But I think you're referring more broadly, right?
Yes, I think that's probably a clarification. I don't know what's the right term. You've got a lot of things trying to affect human behavior. Maybe that's the better mantra. INPO has some terms that they're looking at, but there are just a lot of individual efforts which are going to affect human behavior, human performance. And they're doing good things. They're getting better, but they're, in my view, siloed.
Yeah, the reason I want to differentiate, one is to understand the point you're making, but the other is that with regard to human performance, and particularly the cross-cutting issue that the Regulatory Commission has had, their issue was initially largely focused on what was seen in refueling outage a couple cycles ago. Right. We have made tremendous progress, and you'll see that when you look at the results of the error rates you've had in human performance errors in refueling outages now, where we've cut it to, we cut it in half in one outage and then half again from the error rate, much lower than we've had historically for years on that. So I think we've made a lot of progress in that specific area. But again, I think your comments are more broad that you're talking about.
Greg, has the NRC taken that issue off the cross-cutting issue?
We are expecting they will. They've made their decisions. We do not know what they are yet because they'll be giving us a report coming up in the next, I believe it's about a month away is when they'll send out their reports for the end of last year.
Just one comment. A lot of initiatives are being taken that will impact human behavior. Not just human performance and the sort of error rate mindset, but human behavior. Leadership, for example, is all about human behavior. Culture is all about human behavior. I believe safety culture is all about mindset and human behavior. And I think the recommendation, the spirit of the recommendation is that there be some more enterprise look at those initiatives and a more systemic approach. So you can see all the interaction effects and you can see how to leverage them together rather than a group of individual initiatives that are all designed to do good things, whether to address a cross-cutting issue, because next year it'll be a different cross-cutting issue. I mean, that's the reality of the world we live in.
Are always addressed in cause analysis and are distinguished from other causes, such as organizational effectiveness issues. Management should make clear their expectations that the results of cause analysis will be stated clearly and bluntly and not softened, avoided, or disguised. Now, we've had some discussion on this already. This is a very extensive and, I think, still a general statement. And I wonder if you have something you'd like to add to the detailed response you gave us.
I think our detailed response did identify some of the key issues and things that we've done to modify corrective action program. There is still work to be done. We're going forward with that work. But I think it pretty well describes the key issues of what we're doing. I know you've had an opportunity to talk to some people and look into it in more depth in response here. I'm not sure there's anything more I can add on that right now.
And that's the one I was speaking to. I skipped over the other one. So that's the one I was speaking to that we looked at yesterday.
I think we'll want to watch, speaking about among the committee, we'll want to watch and see how root cause analysis is pursued. I have my concerns about it, which I expressed at the previous meeting. And I think the Corrective Action Review Board is kind of the key to improving the quality of analysis. What I said before was root cause is really kind of a misnomer. If you picture it as everything coming down to one little root cause, that isn't it. It's a whole root system, and when something goes wrong, it's usually because more than one thing has gotten out of kilter. So I'm hoping that the root cause isn't just defined as looking for that needle in the haystack. That's not what it is.
It is not.
Okay.
Any further on this item?
Yeah. I thought this was a particularly good response.
It is
the
good
items
response.
Ahead and following up on implementation would be another thing we need to do. I would ask one question. At the NSOC meeting, I think about a year ago, which we went observed, NSOC also picked up on this item on a few cause analyses that human errors weren't identified as such. They were called something else, whatever that might be. Does this satisfy, Greg, their concerns? Do you know their specific concerns, these actions?
It is satisfying their concerns. There is obviously more to be done as we're going forward, but one of the subcommittees of the NSOC does review this and the progress we've made, and their latest report was relatively positive for what they're seeing happen. But they recognize part of this is building it into the culture of people in terms of how we approach things, and that's something that takes some time to enhance some of that.
Right. Thanks.
Further?
Thanks. Okay, there's a lot of meat in that one. Item 6, DCPP should review the organization and practices of the NSOC, Nuclear Safety Oversight Committee, to identify ways to ensure that all issues identified and all recommendations made by the NSOC are fully discussed and acted on. Benchmarking of other organizations to determine evolving best practices should be included as part of this evaluation. Questions or comments on the response?
Another good response, yeah. I thought.
Anybody?
Yeah, I think NSOC are voicing the same things and have taken action on this too.
Anything to add, Greg?
Yeah.
Okay, let's move to the next. As previously recommended in the 2002-03 annual report, DCPP still needs to develop a comprehensive integrated change management plan where all changes can be located, where interaction effects can be anticipated from changes that are occurring in the organization, where the consequences of multiple simultaneous changes can be anticipated, and the value of change or not changing can be ascertained. This is an ongoing project, a long-term 3-year plan. Any comments from the committee on this one?
If I could ask a question. We were during our fact-finding, we did not have the change management people to talk to. We hadn't asked for it, but we were talking to other people. And as an example, the corrective action program had a very good plan. We thought it was thorough, comprehensive. You know, we were quite pleased with it. We asked whether they had a change management plan for that. The answer was something like, not a written plan. I said, well, do you have a plan? Well, we've looked at it against the elements of the model. Not a completely satisfactory answer from my standpoint. You know, you've got a major plan. It involves a lot of people. Everybody's in the corrective action program. And we came away believing from the people running it that they didn't have a change management function. I think some stations have found that they are making so many changes they can't manage them.
Right.
So it's that overall look which was intended to be in here. And I really can't tell from the answer. I think the committee would need to, and should take a look at that change management.
Well, let me give you part of an answer in any case. First of all, the specific change management process and approach that we talk about here, the model, is something that we've been rolling out and using in key areas. It's not necessarily expected to be used everywhere, even though that's where we're heading, to be able to do that. So when you decide to make a change of some sort, you know, most of us are engineers, and so we look at it very easily in terms of, well, this is what you have to do. If I put it down on a piece of paper, it'll be done, of course, right? You don't have to go any further. So we know we need to also be thinking about how do you get the organization to accept these things? How do you make sure it gets implemented? Probably the biggest area that we've applied change management pretty extensively, and I think fairly successfully now, is in our modifications for work management process. That's a huge change. Rod Kerb is the individual who is responsible for that. And I think you'd find if you talk to him, he's got a very comprehensive change management program about how we go about implementing everything that's tied into that. There are a number of other areas that we have forced the issue to ensure they have one as well as you go forward, like the human performance, addressing those issues that we needed to resolve the cross-cutting issue that we have with the NRC is one that we looked at. How do you go about changing that? And there are other examples as well, but you're not going to find it uniform everywhere at this stage. Secondly, on the overall level, when you're talking about managing the amount of change you have and looking at it in a more integrated fashion, I would say that's really been the responsibility and managed through the leadership team. In fact, we've been having quite a bit of discussion since we enhanced the leadership team with adding a few new people. Donna and Jack Perkins is another individual that joined us. Looking at just that and being very specific about what are the key efforts we're going to be undertaking in the context of a 3-year plan in the next year, that we're focusing on that to ensure that we get the organization's focus on those things that make the most difference for us rather than scattering our focus all over the place. We have not actually gone to the point of having an individual who their full responsibility outside of the leadership team is just to manage those things. We do utilize the internal organizational development consultant to help us in some of the change efforts in that sense, but not in the sense that that's the person responsible for change within the organization. We feel that needs to be with the leadership team. And when I say leadership team, we're largely talking the directors and officers, but also including the managers in many cases.
I think this is an area the committee is going to want to continue to look at. I agree that the change management for work control seems to have been a good model, a good plan, and to have worked. There are probably other examples, but you're working on it. I think the committee should continue to look at it.
David, can I just add?
Sure.
Your second component gets most closer, approximates more closely what the intent of this recommendation is. And that is, yes, you have a model that people can use to help manage the changes that they are initiating and responsible for, and that makes good sense, and I understand you're rolling it out as needed so that it's valuable and useful. The issue here is analysis versus synthesis. The issue here is enterprise. The issue here is that there be a plan, just like there is a station plan, that there be a change plan, and so that whoever manages and integrates that plan, whether it's the leadership team or a person responsible or it falls under a VP or wherever you choose to put it, there's a comprehensive plan. So you see all the changes at one time. You see how those changes affect each other because it's a system. And you get a better sense of the impact of your changes. When you have 10 initiatives, again, going in 10 different directions, as soon as there's a problem, we'll get rid of this initiative, or we'll drop this initiative, or you know, we'll pursue this one in more depth. But the real issue is how do all of these initiatives fit together to move DCPP forward organizationally in terms of effectiveness? And that's really the focus, a systemic approach, an enterprise approach, a comprehensive plan, just like you would have a site plan. You have a change plan. So if that gets closer, and you guys are beginning to work on that because we've made this recommendation before. And the answer is always we have a model. That's a little different from the second issue that you raised. There is a group being responsible for all the changes, taking ownership of the changes process, and we're managing it systemically.
And I believe we have that. I'm not sure it's at the level you're looking for, perhaps, at this stage. But there's been a very conscious effort to be able to look at how much change can this organization take, what's our key focuses, what do we need to focus on. and using the leadership team to be able to help manage that.
The 12 kV system and complete it on that schedule. In the interim, they should proceed with corrective actions on the items identified in the system health report. The response is very specific. Anybody have
quite? Yeah, I think their response was very good. They have had problems with the 12 kV system over a period of years. Their system health report showed that every year. It took them a long time to fix that. They have fixed a lot of problems. They have done that. It says here is the 12 kV system health is trended toward green. I guess it's not in green yet. I think the response is fine. I would recommend we keep it open until we can have a fact-finding meeting and have a presentation on the 12 kV system and look at the system health report at that time.
Since we have two fairly new members, maybe could we get some background about the 12 kV system and what's happening? Just very brief.
This 12 kV system is a non-safe related system. It's just supplying 12 kV power to the circulating water pumps, a lot of the buildings and things like that. A lot of this is outdoors, and they had a lot of corrosion on the transformers and things. They had moisture getting into boxes and electrical equipment in it. That's the proposal.
Okay, that makes sense.
Okay.
Better question.
But it is a non-safe related system, but it still has an impact on the plant.
It has an impact on plant reliability, though.
Well, and in turn can screw things up, so you don't want to ignore it. Bill?
Just a quick question, Greg. You talked about inspecting and maintaining the bus ducts and perform that. Should the committee conclude that that's been integrated into some form of PM program down the road?
Yes, it has.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Any further? Item 10, PG&E should grant security clearances to two DCISC members and a consultant. Well, PG&E doesn't grant the clearances, but the question was whether how we should operate in conjunction with PG&E so that we have a knowledge on the committee about the security system to the extent necessary for our purposes. And the response basically says, well, one is okay. And that may be all right. As I've said before, I don't want that to be me. That will either have to be Per or Bill. And Per already has some measure of this. And Bill, I don't know where you stand on this.
No, I suggest that.
Unless there's any problem, we would recommend that Per take the necessary steps to get his clearance to cover what you're doing. He already has certain access clearance.
Yeah, the issue we raised here is how many people on the committee are given security safeguards access, have access to that, because the committee, as you know, in fact, you just had two relatively new members on the committee, changes over fairly rapidly, or has now on that. And you do need to have access to it, but we would like to keep that to one individual that we provide full access and they speak for the committee and being able to review that. Our concern, particularly post 9/11, is having a lot of people out there over the years who have all had access in detail to all of our security plans.
One of the thoughts, though, is that there is also the request to have one of the consultants cleared as well. And there are some positive benefits, at least from my experience in fact-finding, from having the ability to have two people who are keeping track of information during the process and then reaching conclusions on it. And so the other thing, of course, is that we do have the problem of continuity that comes from the fact that the members change over. Potentially, it can happen quite rapidly. This would not perhaps be quite the same case with the consultant. So one of the questions would be whether we should entertain having a consultant cleared as well. There may be some benefits in terms of continuity without quite the same level of liability of creating a huge number of people out there who've been cleared and who've had access to the information. So at least from my perspective, it would be helpful to have that, and I'm not sure the best approach to weigh that question. of whether also a consultant might be included in this process, and whether we should take it under advisement or reach some conclusions here.
Yeah. The original recommendation was to have several committee members have that, and I take it now you're changing that recommendation, or your request is, I guess, Barry, you're going to be the individual that we provide clearance to, and
yes.
We'll certainly do that, and that you'd like to have a consultant. So if you could specify which consultant you're interested in, we'll look at that.
Okay.
You could probably comment.
Yeah, I think we should discuss that, and then
supervision there, things of that sort. And we do believe that the key supervision has to have a direct role in coaching themselves and getting more involved rather than having a separate individual if that's all they do. We've retained some separate individuals to be able to support. In fact, we added an individual not too long ago, one of our better managers that was respected very much in maintenance, bring him back into maintenance, provide him as a coach to various individuals. We have a new director over to maintenance services, Jack Perkis. I believe he'll be here, if not this evening, tomorrow, so you'll have an opportunity to meet with him. And he is looking at the entire structure of maintenance services and expects to make some decisions, probably about May or so, in terms of any changes he may want to address. Because, at one time we moved towards process-centered teams, essentially, with all the disciplines integrated within those teams. It has some advantages, also has some disadvantages for us. And so he's looking at how he wants to handle that whole thing. The coaching concept came as part of that, is what we're implementing. So there's more to be discussed here, I guess, as we go forward and as we start thinking through how we want to make some changes in that organization.
Does that mean you're really looking at the maintenance organization as a pilot when it comes to coaching?
No, in a sense it has been a pilot. We made some changes back in the mid to late 90s, and some of those changes have been very good for us. Some of them have not worked out as well as we'd like, so rethinking some of those in terms of where we're going. It wasn't intended to be a pilot, but in a sense it has been. For one thing, we do maintenance somewhat differently than you find in many parts of the industry right now. That causes a lot of confusion any time people comes out and uses things of that sort. So we're questioning, are some of the changes we made worth it to be able to pursue that? We think they have been. In some ways, we want to keep the best parts of what we've done, but there's some other things that maybe going back to a little bit more traditional organization for maintenance may make sense for us. But that's all being reviewed right now.
I understand you've gone back to the functional reporting in maintenance, whereas mechanics and electrical.
We haven't really. We have coordinators that look at it functionally. We still have team leads. We have integrated teams of people with different disciplines. That's the main function, but we also have some coordinators over each of the discipline areas that help integrate that in to resolve some of the issues. Part of the question that's being looked at is, should we go back to more of a functional approach to maintenance?
I guess that's what we heard.
Yeah.
You're looking at going back.
But that's being reviewed. It has not been determined.
Greg, correct me if I'm wrong. There is no longer a coaching center of excellence?
I don't believe there's actually a coaching center of excellence called that, because we've gone away from that process model, so you don't call things centers of excellence in that sense. We still do have Tim King as an example. That's the manager I was speaking about, who is working for the director of maintenance. His whole role is to work with the team leads and coach them and bring up their leadership capabilities. So we still have a coaching function, but it's somewhat differently situated than it was before.
I wonder if Tim King is the only example other than other consultants, not any internal people.
I do not know.
I'm under the impression that the strategy is to go back to having our supervisors do the coaching. Initially, we took that responsibility away so that they could focus more on other issues, and we had specific coaches pretty much in every department. Now the strategy is to go back and have the supervisors do the coaching. I know that's going to be integrated into supervisory training, but I think you have a gap. And I would just suggest that you pay attention to that gap. A gap between when you took it away and provided the coaching, whether you call it center of excellence or coaching cohort or whatever they were, after the process thing kind of moved to the side, and that you look at that gap between now and the time that you train these supervisors to provide the coaching. One of the reasons I think you went to coaches is because the supervisors weren't that effective. And now you're going to make them more effective through training and development. but that's going to take you a little time. So just think about the gap. Thank you.
I got confused in the early days when we were getting acquainted with the coaching process. The involvement of the coach in merit evaluations of the employees, reflecting right down to raises and everything else. And that was different than my experience, and I didn't understand whether you were going to keep a coach in that role or not. I gather it's not that general practice.
At the moment. No, it's not.
Okay. Anything further on item 11? Then do I understand the sense is that we would like to accept the report, PG&E's comments on our annual report recommendations, with the understanding that there are several open items which will...
in the hole from 2003. And so in connection with that and the payment of bills which have trickled in, most of the bills through November and December of last year have trickled in, and we are anticipating that we will have a surplus, but something less than $10,000. And so that's sort of at least the framework that financially we made it through last year and did fine. As noted, we cut down on some of the services that the consultants provide in charging for reading reports and such. So then in that regard, and I thought I had the letter, there was an email in Furman relative to the compensation of the of consultants, Jim Booker and Furman Wardell, and their present compensation, and I'm now going to look to them because I'm forgetting, is approximately 140. Is that, am I correct?
145.
And it was increased the last time it was increased was in 1999. So it's been some time. So they have a request that the members consider an increase to their hourly compensation.
Is there a specific dollar figure before the House?
Did you have a specific figure?
Or a percent?
No, but I would say maybe the same as last time would be reasonable, which was a $20 increase.
Maybe on a more at a higher level, originally my understanding is that the rates for consultants and members were set through a process of comparing to typical rates that PG&E had charged, and I'm not sure that
that was just. Excuse me. That was. That process was just for establishing back in 1989 the $200 rate for the members, mm-hmm. which has never been increased. The so that's just with regard to the members' compensation. The consultants has always been established simply by the determination of the committee and its members.
Rob, we didn't do nine fact findings last year, did we? That was one of the reasons we were...
That's one of the reasons, yeah.
There were 2 months we did not do fact findings
right.
last year.
Yeah, I think we did seven total.
That's right.
And this year, who knows? But is there any reason why we could not increase the consultant rate by $20?
No. So it's within the discretion of you.
Well, we'll have to watch the spending, but I think we're looking for 1998. Did you say
99?
That's 5 years, and that percentage would not be unreasonable. So
it could be done by a motion. If that was
it. Well, we need a so moved.
Okay. I will so move.
Second.
If there are no objections, then let's go with that. So we increase the rate by $20, and that makes it to 165. And that will apply to all consultants unless we make a special agreement, right?
Just Jim and myself.
It's just Jim and Furman.
Well, what about
Sheila
the others?
Sheila has a separate contract.
Okay.
And Phil has a separate contract that you just approved.
Okay.
Thank you. Dave, for the record, when are you going to make that effective? Right now or January the 1st or what?
When's your next expense report coming in? I think you ought to make it effective today.
2010.
Berman? Okay. Effective today?
Yes, thank you very much.
Okay.
Dave, if I could make a related point. The early on in one of the resolutions, the PUC addressed compensation for the committee members themselves, said they should be carefully monitored to assure they remain reasonable. Therefore, we order PG&E to file annually a report updating commensurate fees. Earlier on, this says PG&E said the range we pay in what I guess was 89 was 75 to 300. This says PG&E file annually a report updating fees for comparable services. And then the process I would advise with regard to proposed revisions, the compensation levels for the committee members. Only raise it as something that perhaps the committee will want to pursue. I don't know that that has ever been done. I haven't seen them.
Public outreach.
Dave, on that agenda item, though, you also was talking about committee activities for 2005. You want to talk about that now or later?
I took that to mean just in general rather than in terms of scheduling fact-finding, if that's what you're talking about.
Well, either way, you can talk about them now, you can talk about them later. That's talk about fact-finding in the future public meetings.
Well, I think we cover that in a different topic where we do some scheduling and planning.
Right. We've done it both places. Usually there's an agenda item here, and again, as Jim indicates, it does indicate to talk about, hold a discussion regarding the committee's planned activities during the remainder of 2005. And oftentimes, this at least surfaces it. You can discuss it now. You also have, as you indicated, Dave, there's an agenda item at the end. It's the future actions by the committee, which are your sort of your concluding issues, so that might you can do it at either time within the framework.
Yeah,
and that's
thought,
the time you usually talk about.
I thought the detailed planning would come later on.
Okay.
I thought that this would apply if somebody had an additional activity that we were not accustomed to doing. So
we've done it both ways.
Let's cover the schedule later on then.
Right.
Public outreach.
You just indicated, as your cover memo provides, there's a consideration of the pursuant to the decision that was entered by the CPUC last on May 27th, indicates added a new clause: the DCISC shall undertake public outreach in the affected community, including but not limited to assuring that the DCISC meetings are videotaped and broadcast. So two things come up. One, you can have a general discussion, but as and we touched on this earlier, PG&E has been paying for, as they did even prior to this decision being entered, they were making the payments for AGP Video, which does the videotaping and is doing it now for showing on public access channels in the local area. PG&E has indicated that they would prefer that we pay for it. The end result may be we're going to submit it back to PG&E, as Greg indicated earlier. But it would be appropriate at this time. One is that we enter into our proposal would be that we entered into a contract with AGP Video, and they've set forth the terms are set forth in the coverage letter provided to you. The contract we would add to the contract to make it clear that not only do they videotape it, but that there'd be a certain level of broadcasting, because that's of course the other part that needs to be done. And so there'd be two items. One, we'd like to We'd submit that a contract be entered into with AGP Video to videotape, produce, and broadcast public meetings of the committee along the lines and at the cost outlined in the proposal we've received that's attached in your agenda packets. After you consider that matter, we might then wish to discuss, or the members might wish to discuss any further, you discussed it at your last meeting, any additional or other thoughts you have relative to public outreach.
Regarding the contract, I have a couple of questions. The first is the question of what the contract duration would be. The second is in terms of the frequency with which the committee proceedings are broadcast. I understand that it varies from public meeting to public meeting because of other things that are being broadcast. So perhaps we should set some standard for the total number per year to allow for some of the fluctuation that would occur from PM to PM. In reading through the discussion here, and I'm not sure whether some people from the video company might want to comment on.
We're just talking about three public meetings, period.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is that the public meetings are broadcast multiple times, sometimes more and sometimes less, depending on the availability of alternative programming on the channel. And so there's no set standard for how many times our show gets broadcast.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, now that Pears raised a specific question, I have a specific answer that is not ready at hand. I'm reminded that we actually have a contract we've prepared, which was supposed to be FedExed to me. I may or may not have received it, but I don't have it in my hands, but it should be here today. Maybe this matter could be continued over, and then I could have a contract and provide to you all to take a look at the specific language.
If we've got a hotel, is it?
I don't know.
That determines whether you can or not.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we'll hold this over. And
hold it over, if you would, please.
Make sure we deal with it tomorrow.
Yeah. It's sort of like all the FedExes that were sent out to you of the rainbow packets, which may or may not have been delivered on Monday morning.
But. Yeah, my old house got a couple of them not long ago.
Yeah. Thank you.
Open items.
Did you want to talk at this time
about outreach,
Dave, on any other outreach items, just in general? I know, you know, we did have some discussion specifically at your October meeting, and Phil chaired that, and we went through a number of items, and we specifically talked about the issue of the office once again, and talk to members of the public, but there might be some. This would be the opportunity if there is thoughts about further.
I thought the office discussion was completed and closed.
It was.
We're not going to continue that.
One issue you need to talk about, I think, here is in preparing for the agenda for our next public meeting. Are we going to have a public tour or not? You know, what years in the past. We had three public meetings. We had one plant tour in January of each year. Then after 9/11, we could not have any tours at all for a couple of years, and then we restarted it last year, and we've had two public tours of the plant since we've restarted it. And so, but I need some direction on how we want to handle the agenda for the next public meeting. Do we want to do the plant tour or not?
Well, then that's a good point that we should take up now. First, Pear or Bill, any specific comments on that point about the public tour and what kind of agenda we ought to have for that for future public meetings?
I think that there's some benefits to us from having the public tours because it gives the members an opportunity to talk with the local community. And it's very useful to hear the types of questions that get asked on these tours because it gives us some understanding of how information is being transmitted, the detailed type of safety-related information that we have, how it's being transmitted more broadly to the public. And also, I think it does give us one of our better opportunities for outreach is through these tours. I think that we could do more to take advantage of them if we were to, for example, use a short portion of the time at the beginning of the tour to actually introduce the committee and what its mission is and purpose.
and then perhaps look at other things that we could do during the course of the tour that would further the public outreach activity. I think, furthermore, that it's good for the community to have these opportunities to come and see the plant, see the simulator, and develop a better appreciation for what goes on out at the site.
Well,
being new, I guess I'd have to conclude that today or this morning's tour was sort of typical of what a tour yeah. looks like. And I support what Pierre has already indicated. I think it's good for the general public to be able to do things like that. I really wish there were more people, I guess, locally who took advantage of it. It seemed like they were all guys and gals in my age group. And, would have been nice, I think, to see some more youthful people there, perhaps. But I understand people have to work for a living, so I guess we get what we get. But I support. I think it's a good idea.
Other comments? Sheila?
I have nothing to add.
Jim?
I think we're fine.
Furman?
I'll support the tour.
And what I'd recommend is we make this decision one at a time. So right now, if I don't have it public for the next one, then we'll take it up to the next meeting.
Let's take that under advisement.
Long term.
Phil?
I think the trade-off we've wrestled with and you need to wrestle with is with a given budget, with a primary charter of safety, a secondary charter added for outreach. It sounds to me like the assurance of additional funds for additional activities is far from certain. Mm-hmm. And so you want to think about whether the committee can fulfill its safety function and take on more outreach. The tour takes a half a day out of the public meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I don't have an answer or a conclusion, but I think that's what you need to be thinking about.
Bob, any comments?
I think that perhaps what we should do, the tour is one of the more effective mechanisms that we have for outreach, that if they're available in the evening, they can come for that section at least, and that would be the most interesting potentially for them. Beyond that, the other thing that we can do is to continue to monitor and upgrade our website and to look for other suggestions. But I also think that Phil's point is quite important. In particular, if we're going to end up taking about a quarter of our time associated with public meetings and use those to support the function of outreach, which is essentially what these tours do, we need to make sure that that does not impact our ability financially to conduct our primary mission. And I think that probably we should try to make some estimate as to what the additional costs are associated with taking roughly one quarter of the public meeting time for this purpose and to look at what that implies about our budget.
Okay. Greg, do you have any thoughts on this?
No, I think the public tours do have a value that's there. Initially, if I recall, they were started because of California law that says for anybody like this commission is set up under California mm-hmm. law, when any more than two of you get together, it has to be a public meeting. And initially, it was an opportunity for the committee as a group rather than individually to go look at various parts of the plant. Unfortunately, that's not allowed with a larger group now under security concerns. That's why we had to leave the public tour in the simulator building and training areas and not going into the power block. So it's changed somewhat. But I think there is a value in continuing to do a public tour, but it's become much more purely a public tour rather than a vehicle for the committee to pursue some of the technical issues. So I think it's a very valid issue that Phil is raising, and that does that leave you the funds and what you need and the time you have to pursue what is your primary mission?
In terms of funds, there isn't any out-of-pocket. It's just the fact that we're here and we're on the clock, and we're using less of those hours for safety committee discussion. Okay.
You have a public comment?
Yeah.
Yes.
Ms. Rudin? Come on up and talk to us about this.
I'm June Van Ruden, and some of you recognize me. Anyway, I do follow your public outreach, and I think you've gone just beyond. I see the ad. You can go to the web. I get a mailing. I know Mr. Wellington drove all the way to Los Angeles to chat with Lee Martin, who unfortunately passed away at the age of 91. She said she was too old to come to the meetings. He drove out there. I think you're doing a great job of it already. I mean, as far as spending a lot of money and taking people out to look at it, maybe you could put pictures of it on the web. It's a pretty ride, but really what you can see really is... you don't really see that much. You know, you see the structures. And the, you know, the mock-up of the control room is interesting, I think, especially for engineering students or children and so forth. And in general, it's interesting. But I just thought I would mention that because I know it seems like you're asking to beat over the head for public outreach, but really, I think you do a great job. I think anyone that has the slightest interest would trip over your invitations to these meetings. And unfortunately, in the beginning, there was a negative attitude. And I would like to say that that is, I know, a fact changing. And people feel the federal government is just going to be deprived of more and more funds. And they really are looking to the state and to you, even though your powers are limited, because the fact that we have no one else really that will probably look at all these papers and so forth and can understand them. It's comforting to these people finally, after all these years, to know that that's probably, you're probably doing a good job. So I thought I would share that with you. And as long as I'm up here, can I say to another topic that... I just had my Miata fixed, and the labor by the mechanic was 174. And my son in New York pays 400 for an attorney, so I thought, I don't think that's unreasonable. I'm here to say it on behalf of me anyway. I'm laughing. I thought, okay, somebody under my car for an hour, or are you traveling all the way, you know? So I thought I'd share that with you because I thought it was kind of amusing, actually. I had no idea that you were getting slaves' wages or whatever. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dave, the only comment I'd have about a public tour next meeting is...
last year, the number of fact findings was limited just by the availability of people and the time available to do the meetings.
I hate to remind you, it was also due to a lot of legal expenses for some reason.
Oh, yeah. And that's right, too.
Hopefully.
Well, we hope we won't
keep
go through that again.
Profile.
How would you feel? I guess this is really addressed to Per and Bill. Would you feel it's appropriate to plan to have a public tour at the May or June meeting, whatever it is, very similar to what we did today for that meeting, revisit the question on a meeting-by-meeting basis until we make some kind of longer-term decision. My own vote would be to try and do the public tour in connection with the meeting every time, if we can do it. I think it does indicate a response to the outreach mandate, and I think it's a good one. And I think as word of it gets out, that I believe will help the kind of outreach that we're trying to achieve kind of help it happen. So do we have a consensus as far as next meeting is concerned?
Yeah, I can go with that.
I would agree also, and also if we could make some effort to expand the range of people that attend. It was, you know, on an age-weighted basis.
That's the community, man.
We felt a lot like the committee here.
Same thing that would happen in my community.
But I was thinking that it might be possible also to invite and include, say, some students from high school. There may be some science classes that we could have a few students from there or from Cal Poly, at least to get a broader range of ages and backgrounds.
Yeah, I heard that discussion. There's nothing that prevents arrangements being made by groups like that with the visitor center from going.
Right.
They don't need a committee member with them.
Yes. That's correct.
And I think as word gets out of these safety committee tours, there may be more people, and there were on our bus today who were starting to talk with each other about, well, maybe such and such a group would be interested in doing this.
Yeah. Do we know if apart from our tour, if PG&E is doing other tours of the plant?
No.
Quite rarely. We used to have a regular tour program, yeah. Mm-hmm. But particularly after 9/11, right. It was stopped.
Yeah. Okay.
Is there an interest on your part in having more community tours at the level that ours was today, with or without the committee being involved?
Well, we haven't looked at that recently. There is some interest in doing something of that sort, but it can also get out of hand, and so it needs to be limited in terms of what you do. We have certainly made an effort to try to be able to get community leaders, the press, others to be able to go to parts of the plant and see what we're doing, to keep it open. But again, it's this issue between 9/11. We used to take tours that actually went into the power block.
Oh, right. And you could realize that.
Control room, we did not do that, but go to other parts of the plant. Now that is restricted from doing it. And so the issue is, you know, how much would there be really value to take them essentially to the training facilities and to see an overlook of the plant?
Well, if the conversation on my bus we were on today is any indicator, I think there's a lot of merit to it. And perhaps discussions with your outreach people here and Jeff Lewis and the Visitor Center people. You might want to consider doing a limited number, you know, Per mentioned selected groups of students. Maybe you can figure out a category that would be a good one to consider and just do it on a limited basis. I'm sure we would recommend that if we had much to say about it.
I think that we might be able to also distribute the announcements for the tours to local high schools with a note that students, science students, could also sign up to attend, and also to Cal Poly.
You're talking about our tour.
Our tour. I mean, just because those people would also be free to...
Hey, you remember when you were in high school, a field trip meant getting out of class. I mean, you'd get all you want and then some. So we've got to be a little bit careful about what we ask for. Okay, so we're going to include in our summer agenda another tour like today.
Dave, can I comment?
Phil.
On the public outreach, one thing we did today was arrange to have a picture taken of the group, mm-hmm. and left open whether the committee would undertake to mail copies of that picture to those who took the tour. And you might want to continue that. That's a little reinforcement, kind of a souvenir of the tour.
I also agree with the idea that sending picture, the photo of the group out to the participants would be a wise thing to do. It could actually be very simple and inexpensive if we were to send them a JPEG by email. It's actually interesting. Some of the major science museums now, you can in the museum sit in front of a camera, get your picture taken, put in your email address, and it shows up along with a bunch of other promotional materials in your inbox.
By the time you get home.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, well, I hope the Visitor Center people will follow up on that. I think they're going to discuss it. Fern, do we have to go through all the details of an open item for this?
No, but there's some I'd like to cover.
That's what I'd like to do.
Are you on the next item already?
If I possibly
before,
can.
Before you leave public outreach, I just wanted to mention for the committee and for the public that we have, this is now I think the second or third year that we have put the full text of the annual our annual report, some 6 inches thick if you got a hard copy. It's now a link on our website. And this year we also put it out, the annual report's in a CD-ROM capability, which we sent to everyone as well to the people we provide the hard copies to, Governor's Office, Energy Commission, PUC. Truman Burns at ORA asked that he not get a CD-ROM. He likes the hard copy. But we do have these, and we actually provided it, along with the annual report that we send up to the Cal Poly Library, we provided this to the local San Luis Obispo Municipal Library, which is down near City Hall. So just wanted to mention that this is another... It facilitates getting out the annual report.
How about giving those CD-ROMs to the other libraries in the area?
We'll do that.
Down at
there's
what's it called, Santa Maria, and if there are any others nearby.
There's a regional one here in Pismo. Pismo or Rio Grande. Yeah, we'll do that.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, the open items list.
May I make a suggestion? Just a thought. How expensive is it to create those CDs?
Trivial. Cheap.
Trivial, that's what I assumed. Why couldn't at the end of a public meeting that they announce that these are available by calling whatever number, and if someone wants a copy of our report, they could actually get it?
I think it also can be just downloaded off the web.
It can be downloaded off the web, right?
Yeah. Which is
there needs to be. I would suggest at the end of the video presentation that there be a screen that goes up that says this can be downloaded off the web. But not everyone has a web, so I would put an 800 number or someone's number.
Rob's number is a local number.
Okay. Put Rob's local number, anybody's number, who can answer the phone and mail one out.
Sure.
Okay. Is that an inconvenience?
Rob, will you see that somehow gets...
Yeah, we can do that.
Good.
Or sooner or later, we're going to get to the open items list, which is humongous, but we got to do it. But let's see how fast we can do it.
We'll set new records. All right. The open items list is included in your rainbow packet as white pages. We'll just go page by page. And my objective here is, one, to get any major comments you have on items. And two, there's some specific ones I have questions on. I mean, those are pretty much indicated in the very right-hand column called Next Action. Any comments on page one?
And do you want to call specific attention to any items, Furman?
If I do, I'll mention them as I get to the page.
Great. Okay.
And I might add that items that have the word close in the next item column, the last column, are ones I intend to close.
Okay.
If you have a problem with that, let me know. Page 2. Page 3. About halfway down, you'll see items EP3 and EP5, which I have closed question mark. My question is, can we close those items at this time? EP3, for example, Dave, that was your item, where you suggested that PG&E use professional media at the JMC.
Kent sent a memorandum on that, and they have been doing more on this, and it can be closed as far as I'm concerned.
Right. Good. Next item is Phil's EP5 suggested, well, same thing, basically, that the media participate in the critique of the JMC.
I don't have any problem.
It's very tough to get media people to give up a half a day.
Actually,
I don't care where or when.
Actually, PG&E has tried to get media to come for some of their drills, and they won't come for one reason or another.
That's right.
Right, page 4 then. I don't have any. Oh, yeah, at the very bottom, OE4. Let's see.
Are you on the next page, Ernie?
Oh, page 4, item OE4 at the bottom.
Looks like page 5.
That's OE1.
Page 5.
Page 5? Mm-hmm.
Your copy did not print the same as ours.
All right, well then, I'm looking at
OE.
Right, do we need to keep tracking that item on the open items list? Are we far enough along to know that it's not a problem, or do you want to continue tracking this periodically?
Well, I think we want to keep tracking it. It won't be in the immediate one, but it's something that will come up for a future fact finding.
I think after each outage, we should have some kind of report from them on what they found and did not find.
Yeah, because this is going to be a major outage finding every time.
All right, we'll leave it on the list. Just
yeah.
Okay.
Have
same.
What? You have a review of every outage on the list.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Right. That'll come up automatically. And the bowling item,
SE30, you're alluding to.
You know, the bowling item isn't going to disappear, but I think it's going to be effectively in hand at this point. It doesn't have to come up unless something else comes up in the future.
All right. So you're satisfied that we can take that one off our list?
I think so.
All right, we'll close that item now. Going down under steam generator performance, the first item there, SG3, that's reviewing the effects of zinc in the reactor cooling system. I think we've asked that at the outages, and I think there's either neutral or positive effects of having zinc in the system.
They're going to keep doing it.
They're going to keep doing it.
Yeah. I don't think we need to keep it on this.
Take that off.
It's routine now.
All right. Skipping to the next section, outage management. Nothing there that I have. Security, the second item, SEC2 under security, the status of that. The DCIC plans to follow up on the results of phase two of the EPRI aircraft crash study.
And the Sandia study.
And the Sandia, thank you, Phil, the Sandia study.
You know where that stands, Bert?
I'm not sure who was carrying that item initially because it wasn't one that I generated.
No, it predates you.
It predates me, but yeah. I'm happy to take that on. In fact, I was a peer reviewer for the Sandia study, so
it's just something we need to share.
I'm familiar, but at any rate, I can take on this item.
All right. Maybe.
Is that someone, Prairie, you could bring to the committee?
I can't tell you anything about the peer review of this Sandia study.
Because the idea of following up was to look at what the findings were.
Right. I think when it comes to security related matters, we do need to focus our attention into those issues where there are potential either synergies or conflicts with safety, but that we need to stay inside that level or within that region. And so some of the things which are just purely security related issues would fall outside our scope and mandate. In terms of the aircraft crash stuff, I'd be happy to go through and review it bring back what useful conclusions I can.
Right. Moving down through the ISFAC, nothing. Seismic, nothing. Fire protection, nothing. Learning and development programs, nothing, for me at least. Overtime, nothing. Environmental, nothing. NRC, I don't have anything. Other items, no. Then we get down to the public meeting items, and you see we're closing a lot of these items. And if you have any problems with the ones I've suggested closing, let me know. I would take you down to the 6:04 p.m. Mm-hmm. Item 1, PG&E has completed that. We can close that item. That wasn't on your list. That's happened since our list came out. Moving down about six or seven more, item 12. Rob, this is passing Mrs. Groot's observation to the NRC about defining the term independent spent fuel storage installation.
Bob Rathy is in the process, and I don't know if he's talked to Kent or is either has some information or is obtaining it of an addressee at the NRC to pass on Mrs. Groot's comment.
Right.
That will be done. If it's not done, it will be done shortly.
Okay, we've committed to do that.
So yes, it will be done.
This summary statement wasn't quite. I mean, she indicated some concern about the nomenclature, but it's common nomenclature, and people wouldn't understand it if you changed it. She likes it or not, that's what it is. I'm not sure it's anything we can do anything about.
No, but we agreed to pass that on to the NRC.
The minutes say we agreed to pass it on.
And that's all we're doing.
That's right. And we should.
All right, moving down to the 10:04 public meeting, 10:04 p.m. Item 1, we can close that item. We've received that from PG&E.
Same with the second item. We can close that. We've completed it. Received that from PG&E. And if you go down about six...
With the last several public tours, we've retained all... We are adding those people to our mailing list, hoping that they've had initial interest in, and so it was a group of people that could have been on the mailing list that we didn't have there, and so all the people from the last several tours are now on the mailing list.
Good. Next, I would direct down to item 12 of the same meeting. Mr. Clark commented that NRC does not appear to have anyone with particular expertise in human performance, in human behavior, et cetera, et cetera. And that was one of our annual report recommendations.
I don't think so.
Yes, it was.
It came up after the last annual report year ended. So I believe you'll find it in a fact-finding report, but not in the annual report.
Right.
So, do you have a recommendation here?
Well, my recommendation is we let the recommendation go to PG&E and get a response.
All right.
You've added another outside NSOC member in the last year, right?
No, I don't believe we have.
But you now have four external members.
Yeah. Yeah, I think when we made this, there were only three.
Okay. You have four.
There were only three.
Unless one went away.
I think they may have lost one.
There's only three that I'm
only three
trying to think.
Yeah. Are you planning
one
to...
One left or had four. It's down to three. This recommendation doesn't go to numbers, though.
Right.
It goes to expertise.
I think Bill's right. This was a fact-finding recommendation, which we should treat as our fact-finding report comes up for approval and then goes into the annual report.
Okay, that's right.
Then we can treat it at that time.
Okay.
So we'll keep it on the list until that happens.
Okay.
Thanks. All right, moving down the list, item 15, we can close. PG&E has completed that item.
Yes.
Mr. Gillies has left.
Excuse me?
And Mr. Gillies has left.
Correct. The next item, 16, I recommend, or I question whether we can close that or not. Phil, that was one of yours again.
We did not look at technical issues. We ended up with the one-day fact-finding, so we did not look at that.
All right, we should keep that on our list, maybe. So I sort of get the feeling you made a suggestion to PG&E, or you encouraged PG&E to consider other strategies. The question is that worth our following up on? I'm on this. Oops, oh, you're on the wrong one.
18.
16. But another 16.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
I'd be willing to close it.
Close at item 16. That's on the October 04 meeting.
Okay.
You may be a page behind.
I'm not sure that conversation is something anybody can follow. What are you going to do?
We're going to close the item.
Okay.
Also, item 17, question, we can close that or not. Phil's looking at this.
Yes, I think that's picked up in the overall efforts on human behavior.
Right, we'll close that. Moving down to item 22, Dr. Peterson suggested the committee may want to review whether the executive summary of the annual report might be made more widely available, et cetera. I just asked what the status of that is.
We just discussed it, so.
You think we can close that or leave it?
We don't need to carry it as an open item.
All right.
Right, and I think the other part as well, the sign-up lists and using those basically as a part to augment our mailing list is also something that we've implemented, so we can close that as well.
Which one is that?
No, that's
part of the same one.
Part of 22. So I think that we've accomplished
this. Okay.
And those are accomplished, and that action can close. 22 can.
All of 22?
Yeah.
Okay. Right, nearing the end, 23 would be the next one. Dr. Scheinberg suggested a form be passed out to tour participants. and suggested we hold four additional open houses.
You know, the rest of these are just kind of things that we discuss right along. I'm not sure they're specific things. So maybe we don't have to keep carrying them.
Well, we didn't follow through on that one. At least the first part, for sure.
We didn't. We didn't do a form. It wouldn't have done any good today. But it's something we should continue to think about. Okay, why don't we just keep them at the end of the list and think about it.
Access who have interest. But the issue with security is also an important one. Logistically, it is complicated to bring people in. When you go, especially going into the training area, getting off the bus, the mirrors underneath the bus, and checking all the ID again, and that, it's logistically pretty difficult.
Right.
So,
can we go to the new items? This is, I'm not sure how you want to handle these, Brendan.
I agree with you.
Let's go right to the next page.
So that was the last page.
Yeah.
Items in italics are new.
These are the guidelines. That's a separate list.
That's our guidelines. Okay.
This completes the open items
list. Do you want to do anything with the guidelines?
No, that's just for information, unless you have a comment on it. I wasn't planning to go over those. Most of those are items that came off the open items list anyway, or the guidelines we created for ourselves.
I consider this for reference, right?
Yeah. I'm sorry, David.
This is for reference. The guidelines.
That's correct.
Okay.
And I just put in italics. That's been added since the last time the list was brought to a public meeting. That's all the italics are. Now, perform the analysis of the open items, and rather than going over that, Dave, to save time, if you wish, a presentation, I can just hand out sheets to members. You know, the bar charts that I usually generate.
Yeah, that'd be good.
I can hand those out during the meeting or later, and people can...
I'd appreciate that.
All right.
Okay.
Well, that concludes the open items discussion, unless there are questions.
Okay. Rob, will you take the lead on the next item? Item E?
I've lost my
name. Of which we are 40 minutes late, Court.
That's nomination one.
All right. This agenda item, first of all, the I would suggest that the agenda item be revised that it covers both a nomination and election of a chair and a vice chair. Dr. Rawson is the vice chair and has been acting as a chair this meeting, but formally we need also to the committee needs to approve a chair for the remainder of this fiscal year through June 30th, and then next item should be the selection of a vice chair. So first item of business for you committee members should be the a nomination and selection of a chair for the remainder of this fiscal year.
I move the election of David Rawson to chair the committee.
Yes, I would note the importance of having some experience and time on the committee, and with two very new members, myself, who's had only one meeting, and Bill now just joining, that Dave Rawson brings the level of experience that's necessary for this position, and so I would second that motion.
Call for a vote, then.
I vote in favor.
Five.
Okay.
Okay. Next item then would be the nomination and selection of a vice chair for the rest of the year through June 30th.
I move the election of Chair Peterson to become vice chair.
I'll second.
Remaining June 30th.
I'll second. All in favor?
Aye.
Done. Okay. Phil, we've been trying to figure out what to do for a guy who has everything, but we might be able to figure out something to note our appreciation.
Could I suggest, Mr. Chair, that this is such an important item that if we could possibly refer it until after the break, I may have another FedEx item that I might have received.
I appreciate that, but it was in print, so I figured we better deal with it. Let's declare about 10-minute break and then see if we can get back and get to work on the substance. Okay?
Good.
Thank you.
Take one and pass it.